E-Insurance here from CNET. Wait, don't laugh yet, Wendy. We will have time for merriment.
There'll
be time for merriment. Ian Schur, CNET's news executive director, joins us to talk about the world of technology. Ian, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm very good. I was just telling Wendy, and I know it's on the list of things to talk about. Disney now owns the Star Wars franchise. They bought this from George Lucas, a hostile takeover a couple of years ago. All right, so there's a whole bunch of cross-pollination between Disney and Star Wars, and you wanted to discuss the new Star Wars Jedi game, but then I wanted to take it a little step further and tell, and maybe you're already aware of this, but Disney just had this conference, this D23 conference,
yep,
where they showed the new Star Wars land that'll be at Disney World and Disneyland, and their new immersive hotel experience. Are you up on this at all?
I am. I mean, they didn't say much, right? Really what they're doing, they actually announced this last year, I believe, and they first showed the first photos of it.
Yeah.
And it looks really cool. I mean, if you think about what they were able to do to Harry Potter World with Universal.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there recently, and it's rather amazing just how realistic it feels and how much you feel like you're in the movie, down to the music that plays when you're walking through the doors.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably going to be very similar, right? And you're going to feel as though you are suddenly immersed in the movie, and they're probably going to have a lot of really nifty things. You know, in Harry Potter World, you can wave a wand and stuff happens as if you're being magical.
Right.
I imagine you'll be able to do the same stuff with the Force, right? I mean, you can imagine a lot of stuff they'll do that's going to be similar using a lot of the same ideas.
Although Bill told me something that might be a deal breaker. My husband was just at Skywalker Ranch yesterday. He does a podcast, Rebel Force Radio. He loves Star Wars, pushes it on me. I thought, oh God, I will actually partake in this. But you just said something to me that might have queered the deal.
They just announced that.
What's that?
The hotel will be so immersive, meaning you'll feel like you're in a Star Wars galaxy. The hotel will have views, like instead of, you know how at a regular hotel, you look out the window and you see real stuff. Well, this one, it'll look like you're in space. It's a 3D version of space that you're looking out into. And it said that when you check into the hotel, you'll be given the option to wear Star Wars related clothing during your stay. And you can even sign up to have a bounty hunter follow you around during your stay.
Well, that I'd like.
And try to catch you and imprison you. That seems like a little bit much.
Bags for you. They're going to try and catch you.
Yeah.
Although, Ian, you said something with the Harry Potter world. It makes you feel like you're in the movie. Obviously, if people dress up, you feel like you're in the movie. But I am not taking part in that. You sure it's optional?
I'm sure it's optional. It's optional.
All right, I'm back in now.
They can't force it on you. You're paying money.
Right.
But the other thing is that at Harry Potter World, they sell the robes that all the kids wear.
Right.
They're very expensive and very hot in the summer, which is when I was there.
Yeah.
But they sell them. And I will tell you, it didn't matter how muggy and hot it was. I was in the Florida one. There were kids running around in those things. They wanted to dress up like it.
All right, so it works with Harry Potter and it works with Star Wars, but my wife and I did this Manchester by the Sea immersive experience, and I got to tell you, Ian, it was not pleasant.
A lot of handkerchiefs.
A lot of sadness.
All right, well, what's this Star Wars Jedi game?
Yeah, so it was actually announced the same time. We don't know much other than a teaser video that they put. We have it on CNET. But what it's using is augmented reality glasses. You know, this promise of being able to have glasses that you wear that layer on computer imagery on the real world. So imagine you're looking at your bedroom and suddenly an alien pops out from behind your dresser.
Mm.
This is very similar technology. So they're going to offer this, and what it's going to be, at least from the hinting that they're doing, is that you're going to basically be able to feel like you're learning to be a Jedi. So you're going to have a lightsaber that they sell with it, and you're going to be able to go through and experience training to be a Jedi. I imagine there will be quite a few broken paintings and televisions in people's homes,
yep,
but it could be super cool, right? I mean, the idea, you know, one of the real promises of this immersive technology is that you don't have to spend millions of dollars on building a realistic world that they can walk into. You can have it recreated in their homes. And so this could be super cool.
That is pretty
that
cool.
That does sound
I
like fun.
You.
Yeah. Yeah. And how far off? I mean, I know it's just in concept stage, but how soon do you think this will be available to the mass public?
Oh, I don't think it's in concept. I think Disney, knowing Disney and the way that they do products and the way they announce things, this thing is pretty far along. They wouldn't announce it unless they were planning to eventually sell it. So I would be betting, I mean, you know, the next Star Wars movie is coming up in December. If they don't have it ready by then someone's probably really in trouble at Disney.
It's a Tech Tuesday here on WGN. We're talking to Ian Schur, CNET News Executive Editor, and all fun and games with Star Wars and Harry Potter, but something that is in the news and very important. Tell us about these police body cameras that might soon be able to help find missing people.
Yeah, it's a super interesting idea. You know, first off, we know that it's becoming a trend that the police are wearing body cameras more and more, right? It's becoming a normal part of their jobs. And there is this big effort nationally to get as many police equipped with them as possible. So one of the things, of course, naturally you can do once you have cameras on all these people is start applying computer intelligence to them and do stuff like start looking for people who are missing, right? And so now they actually are testing software that would run inside the camera. And as they're walking around, normal day, they would be looking at all the faces of the people that they're looking at and say, hey, is this a missing person? And if it is, then they alert the police and they find them. And that is an amazing idea. I don't know if it'll work, but it's really cool that they're trying.
That sounds brilliant. I didn't know that they were this close to something like that. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, and I mean, there is the negative end of it, right, which is the concerns about surveillance. And let's say that there's a political enemy and someone uses it for that reason, then there's definitely something to be worried about. But on the positive end, you know, Amber Alerts are a big deal. Kids getting lost is a big deal. Even in a you know, if it's a minor thing like a kid lost at the Disneyland, right?
Yeah.
Like being able to use those cameras in that way would be, I mean, I can imagine right now, I've got a 14-month-old. I would be so comfortable with the idea that, you know, all the police would be looking for him if I lost him just a second ago, you know?
So, Ian, if they have this technology and they can use it for missing persons, couldn't they also use it for felons who are on the lam and that sort of thing? They could, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, we don't know how far this technology can go, right? It's very easy to start thinking like Hollywood level, you know, that it can just identify anyone in any circumstance, you know? A lot of felons tend to not be near police, right? They try to avoid them.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you remember the last few manhunts we saw on TV, often they ended in the woods or they ended pretty far from cities. So I would imagine that this is something that's much more useful for missing people rather than felons who are trying to hide in plain sight, if you will, because it's just not smart to do that, not to give any suggestions to anyone. So that's kind of probably what it'll end up being.
See, if that doesn't give you inspiration to abide by the law and be a good, honest person, I don't know what does.
Right.
And how did you celebrate World Emoji Day yesterday, Ian?
Well, you know, with a lot of happy face emojis, of course.
Sure.
You know, it was, in fact, you know, it's funny. My wife and I have very much increased our use of emoji. And it's really fascinating because, you know, I used to think they were super silly, right? They started in Japan, like back in the 90s. And when they started really getting popular in the United States because of our smartphones, I thought, oh, this is silly. But it's amazing how much people have started using them. And my wife will often use like the really sad face emoji when she's trying to be silly or when she's really frustrated. And it just works in so context. And so now Apple has announced for World Emoji Day yesterday what the new emojis are going to be coming in the fall. And among them, they're really fascinating. There's a head exploding one, which I think is great, right? When your mind is blown.
Right.
I'm going to text that to you, Bill, every day.
All right. Good.
They also are going to do, there's a vomiting emoji, which a lot of people have been asking for.
We're going to get that from the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. One of the more interesting ones is a woman with a headscarf, which is, you know, much more on the cultural end of emojis. There's a lot of discussion about making emoji more inclusive and showing of more people than just, you know, generic white or yellow skinned emoji. And then another one that I think is really interesting is a breastfeeding mother emoji. And again, having gone through this with my son, you know, it's really interesting. If you look at it, there's a picture of it on CNET. The woman is not covered, right? She's happy. The baby looks calm. And it's much more, you know, it's part of this conversation in our culture, like being comfortable with this type of idea, which if you read mommy blogs, people still struggle with it in some places.
Ian, how did authors like Hemingway and Faulkner get their novels done without a little picture of a piece of pizza or a cupcake or a snowflake? I don't know how.
Would have been more exciting if they used it.
But I'll tell you, it's very. I've heard this thing brought up to me many times. The end of civilization. English is dying as a language.
Yeah.
I will point out to you that the Egyptians were using imagery in their language. Hieroglyphs were a thing.
Yeah.
So in some ways, we're just coming full circle.
I guess.
I never used them either, Ian. I was like you. I, you know, forbid myself from using them. Thought they were real stupid. Our producer, Kevin, has his own signature emoji, which involves what, Kevin?
It's a flexi arm, a thumbs up, and a sunglasses face.
Nice. Very nice.
That's three emoji.
Yeah, right. But that's his signature. That's, you know, an all-encompassing Kevin emoji.
Yeah.
I hated them and never used them. And honestly, when you're texting someone some kind of snide remark, which I do frequently, sometimes have to put that emoji to show you're kidding.
Well, and that's the thing. It conveys emotion really well. And to the point that when Facebook was dealing, you remember a couple years ago, there was this huge pressure on Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, to have a thumbs down.
Yes.
Right. And he resisted it because he thought like it would make people very mean and it would cause a lot of change to Facebook. Instead, what they did is they came out with all these emoji, right? And you've got the happy face, you've got the ha-ha, the wow. And I will tell you, again, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, this is silly.
Yeah.
People use it all the time. I mean, if you look at your friends' posts, you see people are using every one of these things. And even during the holidays, there's the flower for Mother's Day, there's the gay pride parade, the gay pride flag for pride. And people are using them all the time. It really works well. It's really interesting how pictures really, right, if we want to get philosophical, convey emotions so well and sometimes even better than words themselves.
Why buy your mother real flowers when you can send her a picture of a flower? It's so much better.
Hey, picture of a flower is forever,
yes.
Right?
The no, you're right.
Although
you're right.
I am so glad they added these various emojis that you could put up on Facebook. Because, Bill, you said something the other day. Somebody lost their grandparent, and they write this lovely tribute, and people click like.
Right.
It's weird, but now you can click on the little the little single tear face, which shows, you know, nice post, sorry to hear about your grandpa.
Yeah.
So that makes more sense.
All right.
Well, sometimes it's very hard to, especially in those situations, to respond, right? Like everyone's responding the same thing, right? We feel for you. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And you don't want to be the 1500th person to do that. And so it's really interesting. I spoke with some social psychologists when these things came out, and they said that's one of the really big benefits of that thing, like the sad face, is that it's a way of telling that person, hey, I saw you. I recognize you. I feel for you, without having to push too far or spend that much time like thinking about what you'll say. And that's beneficial for everyone.
See, Bill, you start using emojis.
I just do a barbershop pole for every one of them. That's that's not the right one, is it? I'm doing it wrong. All right, we must take a break. Ian, can you stick around for just a couple more minutes? Are you okay time-wise?
Absolutely.
All right, with Ian Schur from CNET. He's the CNET News Executive Editor. If you have any questions or comments, you know how to get us. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're talking with Ian Schur, CNET News' Executive Editor. Ian, Elon Musk is in the news again. How come?
Well, he does not like artificial intelligence, which is interesting, because Elon Musk is the CEO of Tesla, and Tesla cars use AI to be able to smart drive around. But nonetheless, he went to the National Governors Association on Saturday, and he warned them that not only is AI, and let me find the quote here, it's something like one of the most dangerous, the biggest risk we face as a civilization. So, you know, he's not underselling it.
Mm-mm.
He says that we need to start regulating this very quick. And he's been beating this drum for a while. Back a couple of years ago, he was starting to talk about it. Last year, he helped fund a research group along with Sam Altman and Peter Thiel, two very high-profile VCs, to make sure that artificial intelligence doesn't, quote, run amok. And so this is something he's worried about. It's really interesting because he's a really smart guy. He's obviously very successful, and people listen to him. But I've talked to a lot of AI experts, and we've written stories on CNET. And they say that some of this concern is overblown. They say, look, the concern about what could happen with, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator future is really kind of a pushing what will actually probably happen.
But he does have, there's a genuine fear that, like, if you ever watch the Sci-Fi Channel, half of the programming is about this sort of thing, where they just, they have it in their mind to just take over the world. There's a, it's a legitimate concern to him, though, huh?
It is. It really is. And look, I think he doesn't see it as the comical Hollywood version.
Yeah.
I think what he's worried about is somewhat of the stuff that we were talking about before the break, where you've got, like, police body cameras that are on, that are looking for, you know, both missing people and also being used in repressive regimes to find political people they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where AI can be dangerous, right? And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, we've already seen that computer programs can be written to help take down the internet. We had that huge internet outage that happened last year. We've had hackers using computer programs to get into major companies, and using artificial intelligence to do that type of stuff is pretty scary. And that's probably where the most concern should be and would be, and probably where he's putting his efforts. What's interesting about Musk as well is that he hasn't given examples, right? He's not talking like, if left alone, AI could do this or could do that. He doesn't give examples. He just warns that it's dangerous. And so it's hard to say, well, you're wrong, because we don't really know what he's warning about, right? He's just saying governors and governments need to make sure that they're regulating this appropriately now versus waiting, you know, till 10, 15 years down the road when it's the, you know, the, it's already in trouble and we need to start fixing it.
And you mentioned computers, and we've heard in the news that a lot of people are being recruited into terrorism via the computer. What news do you have on that for us?
Yeah, so there's this messaging app called Telegram that it's very secure, right? It's actually very popular inside Washington D.C. because, you know, people are able to rumor without having to worry about it being listened in on. It's also popular overseas and unfortunately among terrorists. And so one of the things that the guy who owns Telegram just said recently was that he said all terrorist-related public channels that he's been able to find, that the company's been able to find, they've been banning them. And that they've really put an effort into trying to stop this. And it's a huge problem. If you look at the United Kingdom and at Brazil and a bunch of other countries now, they are trying to pass laws to force messaging companies to give access, especially when terrorism is involved. And all of these companies are resisting it because they're, you know, the way they build the security in these programs, if you open it up for one reason, suddenly they can get in for anything. And so they're very worried about this, and it's caused a lot of tension between technology companies and governments when it comes to terrorism and other issues.
Ian, we only we have less than a minute. I just don't know if you saw this story. I saw this morning about this D.C. security robot in the office building that ran amok. Did you see this?
Are you talking about the one that ended up in the
fountain?
In the pool?
Yeah.
That was one of those funny things. You know, look, these things are just starting out. Every story I read said that it had, quote unquote, committed suicide, which I thought was was a little weird.
Right.
I think what happened is that a couple of teenagers were playing around and something happened. That's my guess is what happened.
Yeah.
I love to laugh.
It just shows that we're on the verge of something.
Not
quite there yet. We're trying our best.
No, we're definitely not quite there either way, right?
No.
Whether it was teenagers or the machine itself just kind of screwed up and ended up taking a left when it should have taken a right.
Yep.
Still, it was there's something wrong here.
Thank you so much. He's Ian Schur, CNET News Executive Editor. Thanks for sitting in on a Tech Tuesday.
My pleasure.
Bye, Ian. Thanks. We'll take a quick break. We've got some news for you and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.